You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
More speculation about Triton malware. North Korea amplifies its denials of responsibility for WannaCry. Cryptocurrency markets undergo a strong correction. Blockchain remains a word to conjure with. Citing a potential risk to national security, Lithuania's government bans Kaspersky software. ESET thinks Fancy Bear is growing more cunning and evasive. And how does Siri handle various linguistic challenges? I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Friday, December 22, 2017. The company affected by the attack on industrial control systems, the attack has been called Triton or Trisis, is said to have been in the Middle East, but hasn't generally been named. But now it's said, according to Foreign Policy, to be Saudi Aramco. Foreign Policy sources their story to a report they say they've obtained that was prepared by Area 1 Security. Circumstantial and preliminary attribution continues to point toward Iran. Both the attribution and the name of the target remain speculative. Aramco has denied it was the target of an attack of this kind. The company said, quote, Saudi Aramco corporate and plants networks were not part of any cybersecurity attack or breach, end quote. The Shamoon attack of 2012, generally attributed to Iran, did strike Aramco networks. Triton, of course, is a different matter altogether and affected an industrial control system's safety features, which is why Dragos and other security firms have called Triton a game changer. North Korean denials of responsibility for WannaCry have moved away from the lofty, statesman-like form quoted yesterday and into more familiar rhetorical terrain. The North Korean Foreign Ministry said, quote, The U.S., a source of all social evils and a state of global cybercrimes, is unreasonably accusing the DPRK without any forensic evidence. This cannot be construed otherwise than an expression of its inveterate repugnance toward the DPRK. End quote. While they can't be troubled to reply to every American grave political provocation, this one can't be tolerated because it's aimed at tarnishing the image of a dignified country, in their words. An article in online magazine Salon more or less agrees with the Supreme Leader's representatives, seeing the Five Eyes' attribution of WannaCry to Pyongyang as resembling other bogus war scare ruses grounded on thin and ambiguous evidence. But most observers think the attribution, while inevitably circumstantial to some degree, will probably hold up. It's been a long time coming, some 6 months after officials in the United Kingdom reached the same conclusion. It's worth noting that the UK had a particular interest in WannaCry, since its National Health Service was caught off guard and heavily affected by the malware. It's also worth noting that this is more than historical interest. WannaCry remains in circulation, still hitting the unprepared and unpatched. The DPRK is also thought to be taking a particular interest in cryptocurrencies. South Korean police unsurprisingly see North Korea as a prime suspect in the UBIT cryptocurrency exchange hack. Ordinary criminals continue their interest in cryptocurrencies too. Here there's a lot of installation of miners going on. In several regions of the world, Facebook Messenger is reported to be used to fish the miners into victim systems. Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies crashed hard this morning, losing up to a third of their valuation. It's probably not the end of the speculative bubble, but it's at least a sharp correction. There are more than 100 cryptocurrencies currently trading, and Gizmodo reports that all but two of the top 100 were down significantly this morning. Coinbase, one of the more important exchanges, showed Bitcoin trading at a bit less than $12,000, down from a high of nearly $20,000. Coinbase itself intermittently suspended trading last night and again today. It appears that high-volume trading, more than the exchange could readily handle, was responsible, not hacking or any decision to halt a speculative tumble. To return to North Korea in this context, TechCrunch comments that Pyongyang's alleged raids on financial institutions, the fears it's aroused with missile and nuclear testing, have amounted to a kind of pump-and-dump scheme for cryptocurrency, and that speculators frightened by threats to conventional financial systems have fled to the altcoin world, where North Korea seems recently to have turned its attention. This is interesting, but reports of such wheels within wheels should always be treated with cautious skepticism, pending further confirmation. But blockchain-fueled speculation will continue. The magazine Computing reports that yesterday the Long Island Iced Tea Corporation, which as you'd imagine makes iced tea, announced plans to change its name to Long Blockchain and said that while it would continue to sell beverages, it would also be developing other blockchain-based products and services. Its share price popped from $2.49 to $9.49, then stabilized to just below $7. So hop to it, world, we guess. What are they drinking in Pyongyang these days? There's more bad news for Kaspersky Lab. The Lithuanian government has banned the company's products from Lithuanian infrastructure. A government statement characterized the software as a potential threat to national security. Reuters says the deputy director of Lithuania's state cybersecurity agency told the news service that, quote, information from computers using the software can leak into countries where we don't want it to end up, end quote. Kaspersky disputes this assessment, as it has similar assessments by the U.S. government, and is considering its options. Cybersecurity company ESET has followed up on the threat actor they call SEDNIT, also known as Strontium, APT-28, or Sophocy, and of course our favorite, Fancy Bear. Fancy Bear is generally thought to be Russia's military intelligence agency, the GRU. They're still active and still making heavy use of email phishing, but their attack tools are now more nuanced, less obvious, more selective. Fancy had the reputation of being relatively noisy, at least in comparison with its sibling, the FSB's Cozy Bear. That may be changing. ESET is based in Bratislava, Slovakia, albeit with major offices elsewhere, especially San Diego. We mention this because it turns out that Slovak is not one of the languages Apple's Siri AI can handle, which seems a shame. After all, it's spoken not only in Bratislava, but in many places in North America as well. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Clifton, New Jersey, Niagara Falls, Ontario, and so on. So give it a shot, Siri. Here's something to ponder. Does or should Siri do idiomatic and rhetorical style as well as basic language? Thus, in answering a California's question, would Siri begin the answer with the word, so? As in, question, Siri, should I take Sepulveda or Van Nuys Boulevard? Answer, so, you should take Sepulveda. or consider a question one might ask in Pyongyang or Sinanju. Siri, where can I find radishes? Answer, our glorious self-reliance has answered the radish question to the discomfiture of the miscreant dotard Trump and his reekers. And how would Siri communicate with the shadow brokers? Question, Siri, we are asking why the people's no be buying Equation Group exploits, even in big, big sale. Answer, wealthy elites is finding their bitcoins not worth squat. Which reminds me, why haven't we been hearing about the brokers lately? Kind of miss their dialect, if not the brokers themselves.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Chris Poulin. He's a principal and director for Booz Allen's Dark Labs, where they focus on IoT security and machine learning. Chris, welcome back. I saw an announcement recently that Waymo has started their fully self-driving car program. It's taking place in Arizona. I believe they have 100 cars, and they're geofenced within a 100-square-mile area, and you basically have to sign your life away to use them. So there's a lot of restrictions and caveats and all that sort of thing. But the fact of the matter is, those cars are out there, and they're on the road.
It's true. And in fact, we're both in the Boston area, and the seaport has actually made the seaport an area where self-driving cars can actually operate within the Boston area. So it's starting to go. We're starting to see it in many different areas. And I think there'll be a lot of pilot programs, like you said, geofenced, because I think people are still a little bit wary of autonomous vehicles. That's not surprising. People are resistant to change. I mean, quite frankly, I have an all-electric vehicle, and I can't tell you how many people just can't wrap their minds around the fact that there is no place to pump gas into it, and they don't understand how you can drive it as your primary vehicle because they just don't understand where you get electricity. So, part of it is sort of this change thing where I think there's going to be some reluctance for people to embrace autonomy. But once they sort of get used to it in a controlled environment and they're able to understand that it's not as dangerous as they think it is, there will probably be some adoption point where it will go from autonomy being, I think there's a Gartner survey that said 55% of people said they wouldn't even ride in an autonomous vehicle. And to the point where, they embrace it, you go have a couple of drinks in the seaport and let an autonomous vehicle drive you home instead of calling a Lyft or an Uber or something like that, right?
Yeah, I've heard historical stories about how people had similar problems with the transition to elevators that had no elevator operators inside. They were afraid of getting in this box by themselves. The doors would close, and they would surely fall to certain death if there weren't a human being operating the elevator. And we seem to have gotten over that.
Yeah, I think that's so. I actually just wrote an article, as a matter of fact, it's posted on Ion's Research. And the point of it is that we need to stop selling fear and uncertainty. And it's kind of a problem in our industry, in the cybersecurity industry, a little bit, because there are people who it gets attention. But the reality is, if we can stop putting so much fear and uncertainty about how people can hack connected vehicles, autonomous vehicles, which it's a concern. Don't get me wrong, but. But that's all we talk about. We don't talk about the benefits. And, I don't have the statistics on right off the top of my head. But if we enter into this in a measured way and assess all the risks that we in the cybersecurity space look at the risks of autonomous vehicles and connected vehicles, and we do the best we can to make them safe for people and give them the comfort level by having these pilot programs in different cities, what ends up happening is that we save a ton of money. It's like in hundreds of billions of dollars in fuel costs, in There's something like a 90, I'm not even going to try to guess, I'm going to get it wrong, but there's a huge benefit in safety in terms of the vehicles are going to make better decisions than people do anyway, even if they do make a mistake once. And there's where the fear, uncertainty, and doubt comes in sometimes, is that we say, look, an autonomous vehicle made a mistake once. Oh my God, let's never get in one again.
Right.
Whereas there are hundreds of thousands of accidents every year in the United States alone, and people still persist in jumping into their car. And in many cases, they shouldn't be behind the wheel. So, you know, once we start looking at it rationally and we can start talking about all the savings to, you know, cost of fuel and the cost of time it takes to commute, the safety side of the equation, I'm hoping that everyone will start to understand how much benefit, and it can actually be so transitional. We could actually get rid of parking garages. So again, I think I'm really glad to see that there's a lot of pilots being rolled out, and I'm looking forward to the day when people do embrace autonomous vehicles.
Chris Poulin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
We often focus on technology here at the CyberWire, but of course you can have the best technical solution in the world, but if you don't know how to get the word out through sales and marketing, your chances of success are slim. Our guest today is Kim DeCarlis. She's the Chief Marketing Officer at Gigamon, a network visibility and traffic monitoring technology vendor headquartered in California.
Messaging in the security space is definitely a challenge. When I moved into the security space about 4 years ago, the first thing I did was go to RSA, and I was overwhelmed by the number of messages and the similarity of messages by companies that did very different things. And so as a marketer within the security space, I think you really have to be mindful of not the same, you know, buzzword security bingo, and tie your security message to business needs and try to rise above the tech terms and really talk about the business need, the outcome that the buyer is trying to avoid in some cases, or the outcome that they're trying to have for their enterprise in other cases, and really connect more on a human level than on a technology level.
Do you think that represents a maturation of the industry? I mean, I hear people saying that more than ever, companies are talking about these things in terms of risk rather than technology.
I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, rule number one in marketing is know your audience. And so if you're speaking to a CISO, know what they care about. If you're speaking to somebody who actually works in the Security Operations Center, the SOC, then you're probably going to need to dig down a little bit more deeply into technology speak. But I think it's really incumbent upon us to be mindful of the audience. I think the other thing that we're seeing is security and risk are certainly becoming board level discussions. And that requires another level of thinking and messaging, so that board members and members of the C-suite really understand what the technology is about, what the risk terms are about, and what they need to do to put their businesses in the best position to stay away from the constant attacks, or at the very least, to identify and contain attacks as quickly as they possibly can. So it's different language for different buyers. And again, marketing 101.
Yeah. And as you put together your marketing team, how do you strike that balance between, the necessary technical knowledge, but also balancing that with the skills of a marketing professional?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dave. And as I've worked here with the team at Gigamon, it's really been on a per position basis. So there are some areas where it's absolutely required that somebody have a background in security. Those positions are product management, product marketing, certainly. And on the other side of the equation, analyst relations. You know, I need somebody who's credible speaking to the various influencers and analysts out there. So those positions require security background. Other positions, like somebody managing the website, somebody doing analytics for our marketing spend and our campaigns, those positions don't need to be quite as steeped in the technology. So you really have to look at it, you know, position by position and group by group.
You know, as you walk around the floor of the trade show and you see other people putting their messages out there, are there things that you see that sort of make you shake your head and wonder, you know, gosh, if only these people did a better job? Are there any common mistakes that you see people making?
As I see, you know, messages at trade shows, I think there are a couple of mistakes. One of them is jargon, using too many TLAs and using the same, you know, as I said earlier, security buzzwords that everybody's using. One of the things I've tried to do is really speak more humanly, because in a lot of cases, security starts with people doing things right. And the number of APTs and next generation firewalls and IPSs and WAFs and UEBA tools that you have isn't going to really matter if you can't really put your people in a position to be successful. So I've liked some messages that I've seen that talk about keeping people informed and educated and stopping them from doing natural people things, like inserting the USB key that they found, you know, on a desk to save a file. Who knows where that could have been? But it's really taking the message up to something much more relatable that I think can be a difference maker.
You're running a team there at a large company, certainly Gigamon, hundreds of employees and a lot of success there. Do you have advice for that person who's just starting off in their basement or their garage, who's trying to figure out how they're going to get the message out?
I think the most important thing that any marketer can do is spend time in a customer-facing position. I personally started my career in sales. And at the end of the day, what you're trying to do with your marketing messages and with great products such as those that we have here at Gigamon is solve a customer problem. So anybody that really is wondering about how to get a message out needs to spend a lot of time out in market. And I think a great first job is something where you're in customer support, you're in inside sales. I personally started, you know, in an outside sales quota carrying role, because at the end of the day, everything you do is about solving a customer need better than somebody else can. And maintaining that foundational focus on the customer is critical.
That's Kim DeCarlis. She's the Chief Marketing Officer at Gigamon. And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.